Hello, I am Isawellen, and this is Isawellen Writes Grown Up Storytime. I get to talk with amazing erotica writers, J.S. I don't know if I'm going to say this right. I'm going to need her to correct me. Sandro? Is that right? Sandro? And Vlad Lioncourt today. And look, there's J.S. She's here. So I'm very excited. I'm a little tiny bit late. But, you know, it's me and the microphone and just hanging out with you guys, having a good time. Everything's all relaxed. So if you guys want to call in, we will start our story time. I'll just kind of ease. I wish there was a way I could just ease out of the music, but I can't. Once I hit that button, it's just like, dump. I'd like a fade. I'm just saying it'd be neat if I could get a fade. And I'm going to stop it. So, if you guys want to click on the little head thing icon and call in, we will chat. There's Vlad. Ah! It's always so amazing. This always blows me away that I get to talk to people just from across. I got to move my mouse. It's not. There we go. Hello.
Well, hello there. So I'm fading in.
You are fading in. Very good. So, J.S., I see you too. You can call in the same way. You just click on that little head and it rings me up and it bounces right on my interface. It'll bounce up and there she is. Hello. Can you hear me?
I can.
Yay!
There she is.
We are connected in a party call. Oh my goodness. I know. Okay, so I know it seems like it's going to be a really complicated thing, but look, you did it. We're here.
I did, and shame on me. I didn't bring party favors.
Oh, I know. We should. We need party. What kind of party favors would you have brought? I like toot horns myself. They make a lot of. I kind of like to make a lot of noise, but.
Oh goodness.
Or there's little popper things.
Oh sure.
No, she would definitely be bringing donuts.
Oh, donuts.
I probably would. That would be a lovely idea.
What is your favorite kind of donut? Your favorite kind of donut like tells you about somebody's personality.
No. It's hard to tell just because I love cronuts and of
course.
Oh,
yum. Yes.
There's so many kinds.
There's so many kinds.
There's so many places.
Isn't that the truth? Isn't that the
I
love sweets. Journey. I have a massive weakness for and you want to try every one. You can't.
Oh no, you have to try every one to discern what you like.
Exactly. You have to try it out. Otherwise you're not going to know. And the options are endless.
She actually coined the phrase donut-gasm, if you want to know.
Did I? I don't think I coined that. It is a very real thing, though.
I think
donut-gasm.
Well, I've been called a donut whore.
Oh, no.
I wear that badge proudly.
Where do you get your donuts from? I mean, is it
everywhere? I look for boutiques. I literally look for boutiques. If I'm traveling anywhere, I go out of my way to find boutiques that I can't normally get donuts from.
Have you had voodoo donuts?
I think I have.
They are very popular. They started in Portland and they've expanded. They had some place in LA, but they're the ones who put the bacon on the maple bars.
Well, a lot of places, I have to tell you, a lot of places.
Oh, yeah.
They originated that idea.
Oh, did they?
They think,
put cereal on their donuts. They do all kinds of weird. And then they
the thing is that if the topping outweighs the donut, then it's not worth it.
You cannot do that.
The donut has to be as good as the topping.
It's true.
It is true.
It is very true. And if it's too sweet, if it's too, you know, it can't.
Yes.
You're exactly right. It's like birthday cake. You're like, oh, one bite because
it can't be that sweet. I mean, yeah, you're truly going for that sweet, but otherwise, no, not that sweet.
You gotta have this pound. I agree. Well, that we're not here to talk about donuts, but that was really good. Now I need a donut so bad. Oh yes, I'm actually kind of close to like three different donut places right now, and that I've been avoiding them, but now I'm like, oh my god,
why have you avoided them?
Because I'm trying not to add any more weight to the waistline, and I haven't.
But there's something about moderation, isn't there?
Yes, I did that. I actually bought one, and I'm like, I'm just going to have one bite. And it was good because it was so early in the morning. It was like 5 in the morning. So they hadn't brought them out. They'd only brought out, their selection was limited, which really helped me.
I think the exact phrase is, there's no fun in moderation.
I've been known to buy a half a dozen and take a bite of each.
Oh.
That's moderation. I get a little bit of everything, and then it seems like I'm sharing with everyone. It's just, there's a bite in it.
There's just one bite. Don't worry about that.
There's just a bite missing. Don't worry about that.
It's like the candy, you know, the See's candy or something like. You just want to taste in just one bite, and you can have the rest. Yeah. I do that with my daughter. Well, anyways, yes, no, I'm going to share this show out really quick. Although we have people in the audience, it's so good that everybody has been wanting to hear you read, and there are other, I don't know what else. If you guys have questions, go ahead and ask them, and I'll see if we can get around. I want to start out with your kind of writing journey, each of you. I like to... You know, have you always wanted to be a writer, or how did your writing develop? I know that you've written books, but you both also post a Twitter a little bit, and you do a little bit of that erotic sharing on Twitter. So how did that happen? So Vlad, I'm going to start with you. How did you publish a book? What inspired that? Where did that come from?
It actually started back in 2012-13. Which were not particularly good years for me. So I was going through a hard time, and my wife actually had heard that that writing was a very cathartic thing to do. So I took it upon myself at her behest to actually write my autobiography and get it all out, spill out my guts, so to speak, and get it all on paper. And I took some time to do that, and that was actually the first thing I ever wrote. And she turned out to be 100% correct. It was quite cathartic and helped me a great deal through some dark times. And then I was then challenged to write a story for a blog, a Christmas blog by a friend of mine at that time. And I thought, well, if I can write something as deep as my autobiography, I can write a Christmas blog. And that story eventually became my first book, called The One. That was a very early version of that was presented as a blog, as part of a collection of Christmas stories, BDSM related Christmas stories. So that's how I started.
Okay, JS, how did you start? How did you get to? Why did you start? Where did your writing journey start?
Well, obviously, our journey begins when we begin to write our name. My lover and I have always read erotica with one another. And there's always a search for different stories to read and whatnot. And we both have migrated more towards more realistic versions of erotica that, they're not sensational. They're not... where it gets so far-fetched it could never happen into fantasy land. So, I don't know, I'd read enough stories at some point in time that it started to shed BDSM in a negative light, that the want to feel something or do something or experience something came from a negative place. It came from anger and abuse and whatnot. And it shouldn't be like that. Erotica and BDSM should be it should be a positive thing. That's just an amazing sensation. So I just figured, all right, I'll just lend my voice to it in a positive way because there's so much negativity about it. Maybe I can counter that.
Mm-hmm. So I need to. Can you? I don't know if you need to move your mic a little bit, but I might need you just a little bit louder because I don't want to miss this. This is really good stuff you're sharing, and I can hear it, but I'm not sure how it's translating over the audience. So just
is a
tiny
a
bit.
Louder,
that is a little bit better. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
So that that's kind of, I mean, I've always written, but what brought the book out was a response to some other writing in my genre that was, I felt was very negative and left me with a bad feeling even.
Absolutely.
And I needed in my head to turn it around. I needed to make it right. And so, I like happy endings, and these books didn't have happy endings, and so that was part of my need to fix it. And I know a lot of, I mean, I've always written, but I know a lot of writers that I've said, you know, if you can't, if you're stuck, and you feel like you have writer's block, go read somebody's bad writing and fix it. that's very motivating for me. I mean, it may not work for everybody, but it's been very motivating for me. And the writing I'm talking about wasn't necessarily bad, but the story just didn't resonate with me in a positive way. And I had to, I couldn't get it out of my head until I fixed it. And yeah, so that's neat that you wanted to turn the whole journey around with your erotica that you were reading and turn it positive.
I just wanted to lend a positive voice. I'm not as deep as turning it around, just saying, hey, there's another voice out there saying that it doesn't have to come from negativity.
There's something else to see here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Into our journey.
Yeah, exactly. So you both had BDS. If Vlad's writing for a Christmas blog, you both kind of had a BDS and background before you started writing the erotica. So does your erotica, your stories come out of your life? Are they more life-based or are they, how does that work? I write pure fantasy. So mine come out of my head and then I realize afterwards how much the characters, how much there's in of me and my life or what I'm going through or even future things that I'm going to go through, end up in my writing. It's kind of amazing to me because I'm not doing it intentionally. Right. You know, it just comes out. So where's the, I'm assuming, I just want to know where the real life connection is with some of your writing. Because I did read the story you wrote together and wow. And so how much of that is real and how much of that is like a mental journey, fantasy, or yeah, where's that connection?
Go ahead.
Well, if you want to talk specifically about that book, it was quite a journey. It started initially back in 2015 when I was chatting with two friends of mine who shared with me two remarkable events in their life, and both ladies had experienced basically sex on a dance floor without consummation of the act. One had an orgasm, one called it before the orgasm. But that sort of writhing bodies in heat and thumping music and so forth really did get to them. The whole ambiance of the situation got to them. So throughout that conversation, I was very interested in why they called it and what would happen had they not called it. And that was an absolutely fascinating discussion and led to the construction of the first scene of that book, which was the dance floor. So it sort of sat there as a dance floor scene for a long time. And then it sort of expanded from that. There was various things that happened that pushed it even further. One of them was another friend of mine is into CNC, which I know you tweeted something about it, Issa, recently.
Yeah, I've been consent. Yeah, Exactly. Because there's... So go ahead.
Well, I just ran with that whole concept of, well, what would happen if one of these girls had a fantasy that involved that? Basically considered it to be the purest form of submission, the quickest way to subspace, if you will. And so I added that to the story, taking taking it to the extreme. And then after that, I started to consider throwing a Dom into the story. And that changed the whole thing 180 degrees, if you will, because at that point, how does he deal with someone he loves pursuing something that he's not comfortable with? Because one of the things that a Dom takes on when he accepts her gift of submission is her care, is her happiness and her growth. And he's got to be responsible for those things. And if he cannot feed a desire of growth in her, then he's failing. So this whole concept of, well, she's got a desire to experience something that he's not comfortable entered into the picture. And this changed things in that, was he going to be able to step up, give her what she wanted, or would he fail in that task? So the night became a stage of parallel growth for them. Was he going to be able to get to where she wanted to go? Was she going to be able to get there? Would they get there together? And at some point it becomes almost a competition. He has to break her. She has to not be broken. It's a test of wills. This whole sort of whole undercurrents of the story sort of exploded when I considered that he might not be comfortable with where she wanted to go. And so I wrote that whole part one from that.
You started with that concept, but did your characters kind of take over? I mean, that happens with me sometimes. With their willpower, you just started to write them out, or were you intentionally, well, it sounds like they started to take over.
They did. I had probably four versions of the initial story before I settled on it. But where JS and I got involved was, I thought, well, wouldn't it be interesting to tell this entire part one all over again, but from her perspective? And so I approached JS with this idea, and she read it. And this is where her comments from earlier came into play, that she cannot write BDSM from a place where it is not based in love. And so we went around and around on 2 years, because in the initial version, Rebecca was determined to get what she wanted at all costs, and JS was simply not going to write that. And so we went around and around for 2 years, as you can imagine, and finally settled in a place where
you finally settled on a compromise. That's fascinating. The process of your start to finish, you started with a scene out of a conversation, and then everybody has a different way how they've written the book. The development of this book is really interesting to me. It's different than anything I've heard before, because it's one idea, and then you grew it a little bit with your viewpoint and the things kind of you wanted to teach and show through the characters. And then even that, the character started to take over, and then you bring JS on. And I totally agree. For the character Rebecca to go through this without love, without some kind of feeling, would be very triggering for me.
It was very triggering. Oh, yeah. It was very triggering for me. The initial story actually reminded me of someone I know very well, and she's very destructive and hell-bent on getting attention in any way possible. And actually his original Dom in the story as well reminded me of yet another person I knew. And neither of them ever grew in life from when I knew them. And I knew them both for a long time. And so I needed the story to grow. I needed the characters to be able to grow and be redeemable. So
yes, that word redeemable was used quite often.
We battled a lot. We really battled a lot because he had one vision of the story and one idea he wanted to move with. And then unfortunately, I decided to give me the project and I had a whole other idea. And it's just the two, almost it seems, the two could not gel because I tend to write from true experience and not necessarily fantasy. And he writes from fantasy and he's never met these people that I know. So he could envision it going one way where I'm like, no, it happened. This happened. I know it happened. And it didn't go as well as one would hope. So it was that battle between us for the characters to be redeemable and to have love and to be able to grow.
So how much do you think, you know, the difference between a man writing an erotica and a woman often is very, I've talked about this before, it's very stark there. Unless the man is approaching it as a writing challenge to capture, you know, it depends on his audience, really. Mm-hmm. If a man is writing for another man, the writing is a little different. That women want, there are certain words that you don't use with women. And I don't mean the harsh words like cunt or something. I mean like just, there are just certain words that are just no. You would never say, oh, I know. I had a conversation with somebody the other day. They said, would a woman say this? No. A woman would never piss in a toilet. A woman would, you know, there are just certain things, a way a woman talks and thinks that they would never do.
Yes.
And so when a man is writing for a man, and especially about sex, it's different than when a woman, because you're coming from the point of relationship and he's got other goals. He's wanting to experience, you know, the dom point of view. But I'm assuming, Vlad, that you are going for experiencing the highs of the sexual experience, maybe, rather than the emotional connection of the sexual experience. Mm-hmm.
It was a parallel because what I really loved about the book is the challenge between them, that he has to grow. If he doesn't grow, he's going to lose her. So he is not this sort of perfect man. He's not this perfect dom that is on a pedestal. He has lots of foibles and lots of worries. And the entire part one is sort of built up around his concern about whether he can step up to the plate. Now, the sex, the BDSM is obviously part of that. But I think what's fascinating is his own challenge to himself. I love that bit of it. Now, when I initially wrote it, I thought Rebecca would be very compelling as sort of a femme fatale, sort of a, you know, I'm going to burn everything down to the ground to get my wish. And this is where JS and I were really at odds, but in the end, she was absolutely right. We making them redeemable, I think, has made it a better story. I don't know if Rebecca would have been more compelling as a, burn everything down woman who would get everything she wanted at all cost. But I think having love when in this book was the way to go in the end. It took 3 years to get there, but we got there.
as a woman reader who's read erotica and romance, the femme fatale who burns everything down is usually the villain in the story.
Yeah.
She's not a relatable character that women, you know, aspire to be or want to be. And so for JS to come in and soften her a little bit with her point of view of trying to deepen their relationship and that her goals weren't as selfish as that, it redeems the story quite a bit from a woman's point of view. I mean, I don't know as a man, I mean, how do you, so he's stepping up to the plate, but you envisioned her as this femme fatale. How does that, how does that, attract you? I mean, I'm trying to, because it's a negative for me. It's not attractive to me. So if your audience is men, what does that, How does that appeal to other men? How is that appealing?
The word that appealed to me, the word that appealed to me was compelling. I mean, think of Silence of the Lambs or some of the great characters in movie history that you cannot help but like, despite the fact that they're self-centered and evil. They're very, very compelling. And there are no sort of women like that. So this was my initial perspective, but I truly believe now it was incorrect. It was not the way to go, but it was a long journey with JS and
I to get there.
Yes, because I had sort of this initial vision, and she has decades of real life experience in this that I do not have, and so obviously that became a very important consideration. Because if there's not a realistic feel to the story, it's simply not going to do well. So
I just want to say the book we're talking about is, yeah, well, that's amazing. The book we're talking about is Obliterating the Ordinary. So you did defer after that time period. It takes trust, which I know is important to BDSM, but when you're writing to collaborate and to hear what she's saying to you, even though it seemed to have taken a long time to get there. So how does that, what does that work? I mean, why did it take so long? Is it just because you were arguing over it, or is the back and forth? Oh, yes.
There was a lot of back and forth, and truth be known, I would not, it would still not be finished. It wouldn't have come out when it did. I think a little bit of more hammering out would have been a better idea, in my opinion. But I relented a lot, so because Mr. Lioncourt wanted to get the story out there, so I relented and said, all right.
I can see it's not the type of story that I generally read, even though it's the quality is way above, you know, there's all kinds of stuff it doesn't matter on Amazon or Literotica, whether it's free or whether it's sold. There's all kinds of voices out there, and the quality is really great. The flow is really great. The characters are strong, but it's as far as erotica, it's not my cup of tea. There were still a couple triggering things in Rebecca's character and just the situation. I'm not a, you know, in the fantasy that for me, that's not my type of fantasy. So it's still a really compelling piece of work that you guys have put together to get out there. And then the collaboration part, you know, is kind of amazing that you did this, you came together, you had your different viewpoints, but you both had to compromise a little bit. And
I wouldn't say that. I don't think Jay has compromised on anything.
I compromised an absolute lot.
I think she did.
Mr. Lioncourt, if I released the version I would have released, everybody would see how much I compromised. I absolutely compromised. There's a lot I wrote that's not in the final story.
Yeah.
I compromised.
I can see that she probably did, just from as a female audience, that there's difference. I have had authors. The reason this is such a subject for me is I've had people say, "Well, there's not a difference that between the men and women and the way they write and the audience, and you're just writing a story, and whoever likes it, and whoever doesn't." Mm-hmm. I can tell you as an author who's sold a couple books that knowing your audience, if you want to, you know, and Flag's like, I'm just writing it for me. So I'm sure. And because that's his audience, that's why he's fighting so hard, you know.
Well, you can't know your audience until you create the audience.
Yes. Right? And so it's there's a little bit of, you know, that's funny to me. The just the difference, the way men and women think, and then the audience and those components in the story. For me, for this book, it made it a little more stark, the differences, mm-hmm. you know, not in a bad way, just that I really do think men and women think differently. And
absolutely.
And that's not a bad thing. I'm actually fascinated by the way, you know, and I liked how the Dom, you know, his challenge was to step up to the plate and to he's search inside himself and see if he could open up the things that he really was kind of afraid to even touch. That dark part of himself that probably more people have than they want to admit to, you know.
Well, I will say it's only fair, because in that kind of relationship, it is not one-sided. Both sides have to be bare. Both sides have to be willing to grow. It's not one-sided. It's not as though just the Dom makes the submissive grow. That's not how that works. It's two-sided.
Yes. And so you had to put that in. You got your, you know, she's growing and she's facing the same.
But he has to grow as well.
Yeah. And
well, that's a big part of our book, though.
Go ahead.
Is there a challenge to each other to grow?
It is. And, you know, that's what makes good writing, too. You don't, for erotica, a lot of it is, some of it's the journey, but it's still a flat journey. It's really more the exploration of each situation. There's not a lot of mental. Some books have more. Some books have less. This one has more. There's not a lot of mental challenging. There's not a lot of that back and forth. And the coming together. And I love the way Rebecca at the end, her point of view, JS, and the way it did switch it up a little bit. It was great to have, you know, after listening to the Dom, you know, his point of view and what he thinks she's thinking and how he's trying to stay 10 steps ahead and almost the competitiveness. And then you come through with your side with the sweetness of the relationship. I mean, and, you know, that was the immediate voice. The afterwards, you know, was just the way she was looking at everything was much sweeter. And people, you're going to have to read the book. I'm not going to, but it was a great collaboration. Really kind of amazing.
Thank you for saying that.
Thank you very much.
That's very nice of you.
You're welcome.
I know, Issa, that you're fascinated by the different ways that men and women think, and it really does come out not only in how JS and I collaborated to do this, but in our everyday dealings with each other. We've joked in DM about her being a circular thinker and maybe a linear thinker, and that is not really it's kind of funny, but it's also extremely true. JS and look at the world very, very differently. She's a very circular thinker and I'm a very linear thinker, and it comes out all the time.
I don't think that has to do with the sexes. I think that's just the way minds work. Minds work differently throughout, no matter the sex.
Some people are more A, B, C, D, E, F, G. I'm also a little bit more circular. I'm more A, Z,
X. A-Z-1.
Yeah, 15.
Let's go Y, EZ, I don't know, 0. Yeah.
26, did I feed the dog?
Sure, let's do that.
You know.
Yes.
Exactly. So I would love for you both to read. I'm so glad you guys came on today to talk about this book, just to talk about the writing journey, to talk about a little bit about the BDSM and how you know, your different viewpoints. Vlad having not experienced as much as JS, which is funny. I asked Vlad, you know, are you dominant in life or are you dominant? And he gave me a little bit of I've not ever lived this out, but you very much come forward as a man who knows what he knows, his own mind, and as more of a leader and not, you know, a peon. So there's a difference in
personalities.
And that came across pretty quickly to me, which is always another thing that's funny to me about the internet and the way you get the sense of people just by writing. He is a leading partner. I'm late, but I didn't read the I'm looking at the chat. Yes, he is. So so that's interesting to me too. But JS is a very strong personality. You are, not in a negative way, but you're a woman who knows who she is. And that comes across pretty clearly.
It does? Are you sure?
Oh, yes.
Oh, of course it does.
In a positive way. In a positive way. She knows who she is. She knows what she believes. You're not like waffling on, well, I don't know, maybe. No.
You're like, no. You got to commit.
See?
If you're going to step in the water, you got to go ahead and commit.
Exactly. So that's also fascinating to me, too. People just are amazing. I'm a little bit of a people watcher.
Such a people watcher.
Are you too?
Life would be boring. Life has been so boring without people watching. Oh,
and just trying to think, you know, am I right about this? Is this how this dynamic would go? Is this really what that
now you're waffling. Oh, no. There's no waffling about am I right. If I'm going to thank somebody about someone, if I'm going to observe it, that's what it is. There's nothing else to it.
Yes, strong personality, yes.
Is that strong or is that just determined? There's a difference.
No, there's both, because even if you're determined, you have to have strength. You have to have a little bit of chutzpah to get to be able to put that out there. Hello, an English gentleman. I see you. It's so good. You guys have gotten, wow, we have so many people listening in who want to hear you read. So, Vlad, everybody.
Mr. Lioncourt, you're up.
I'll let you go first. And I think I'm going to enjoy both. And I don't know what you're reading from. So,
I thought we had to read from the book.
Yeah, you can read from the book, absolutely. But I don't know what parts you guys have chosen.
All right.
So I'm bracing myself for the
what I've
parts.
Chosen is a key part of the book in which they both realize that he has taken over control of the evening and that he is going to take on her challenge, so shall we say. He's going to step up to the plate. So it's a key moment about a third of the way through the book. And what has happened in the prior scene is that she been brought to heel. Her attention has been grabbed, and she now realizes she's not in control anymore, that he is. So he has used a cane on her, and he has used his open palm to get her attention. She is standing in front of him, somewhat defiant. Okay, so I will continue from that point.
Okay.
Her eyes burned into me. Rebecca, you are here to please us in any way that we see fit. We own your body, all of your holes, tonight. If you displease anyone here, you will be dealt with very inappropriately. Are we clear? Yes, sir. We had her full attention and her agreement. I looked at the other two men and then at the cane in my hand. Don't worry, gentlemen. Rebecca will be most obedient now. I whispered out a command. Gentlemen, please remove her clothes and do not do it gently. They were finally getting the picture. Dylan ripped her dress down the front, extending the low cut to its base. It ended up falling apart, hanging from her cuffed arms. She was down to her bra and garters. Jeffrey stepped in and ripped at her bra, breaking it off at the clasp in the back. The remainder fell over her stomach, again stopped by her bound-up arms. I handed him the knife, and he made short work of the rest of the fabric. Her perfect breasts were finally free and were swaying magnificently with her heavy breathing. A little bit of light made her skin glisten. I thought she was close to orgasm already. Her mind was fully engaged, to say the least. Her garters and stockings were the last remaining adornments on her body. Her nicely groomed pussy was so beautifully framed that it caused all of us to pause. Regaining my composure, I said, "She is not naked, gentlemen. It's going to be tough to get the rest off while she is standing." They needed no further instruction. They lowered her to the ground, and then each one grabbed one of her legs, first pulling off her remaining heel and then her stockings. The last thing removed was the garter strap. Rebecca was now completely naked and panting in anticipation. They pulled her back to her feet and stood on either side of her. These men were more intuitive than I had anticipated. They were holding her for me, almost a pagan offering. I smiled because it reminded me so much of Fay Wray being offered to King Kong. They clearly wanted to play out the scene I had in mind and were smart enough to know that if they were patient, they would indeed get all they wanted. Rebecca was standing there, unfocused, swaying, her mouth open and breathing deeply. She looked ravishing in her state of anticipation, skin glistening in a pre-orgasmic state. I was not sure she was fully present. She was utterly lost in desire. I crossed a few feet between us and stood in front of her, my face barely a few inches from hers. I reached out and grabbed her chin, forcing her head up in my direction. "Rebecca, you have been a whore to fantasy and a whore for these men out on the dance floor. Do you know what happens to whores?" Rebecca did not reply, other than a gentle biting of her lone lower lip and a slight tremor over her body. She adored a good scolding. "Gentlemen, I'm going to teach a lesson to this insatiable slut, after which I will throw her to the wolves." I pointed at them and said, "And you two are the wolves." In the dark, they looked like two Cheshire cats. I had to smile at the thought. We were definitely falling down the rabbit hole. There was suddenly a strange shudder from Rebecca. The multiple sessions I was alluding to were probably making her overload on anticipation. In fact, my guess was that she was too lost to anticipate the full extent of the breast play that was about to happen. Hard breast and nipple play was not on her list of favorite BDSM activities, which made the next phase absolutely perfect. I was in a controlled state, a mixture of sexual high and primal urges, and her breasts were going to be my first target. This punishment was going to be real. I stepped up behind her and reached back around, lightly taking a hold of her breasts. I growled in her ear, "Remember, you can use your safe motion and end this at any time." I heard her slowly come to life, gulp and shudder a bit, and then say, "Not a chance, sir." I started squeezing her breasts, each squeeze with a twist and pull on her nipples. She moaned harder with each cycle. I quickly reached intensity far past what she had ever experienced before, and yet there was no safe motion. My fingers were digging into her breasts, and her nipples were being pinched, twisted, and pulled like never before. Not only was she taking it, but she searched and found my rock-hard cock and gave it a squeeze. What the actual fuck? This was a new ballgame. This was just the first pitch. She was finally getting exactly what she wanted tonight, and this seemed to have changed her very DNA. Internally, I was both impressed and weirdly annoyed because she had already blasted through one limit and the night hadn't really started. She was signaling that things were different, and I had better be up for the challenge. I knew I had to up my game even more. I moved to her side, calling in Dylan and Jeffrey. I had to shout to be heard. Rebecca is very experienced in the fine art of begging. I don't know if you've ever had a woman beg you to do what you most desire, but I assure you, there is nothing hotter in life. It cannot be surpassed. Please observe. I turn to Rebecca. ... The end.
You read that beautifully. Wow, what a hot scene. That was, you did just, you're a very good reader. I'm sure you're going to get lots of compliments afterwards. That was
well, thank
really
you very much.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy for him. I know it wasn't easy for him.
I know. And he did very, very good. He did not want to. Audience, I want to tell you, he was coerced into reading. But he did really well. And I know that lots of people are just going to be thrilled to have a chance to hear you. It's always fun as an author to read your work and share your work with your audience, because you get to put the emphasis and the emotion where you think it should go. And I think I'm so glad you shared that with us.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your support.
You're welcome. Would you like to? There's all kinds of comments. Just a minute. Your owner has come in and said, "I can validate. She is very strong personality. I lovingly fight it every day."
I don't know what he's talking about.
No, no clue, no idea. And Quincy's really enjoyed the reading. Quincy is an audio artist, and so he's not going to lie. He said, "Fantastic." There's I can't D-E last solace said amazing job, Vlad. Uh-huh. And everybody is, yeah. So you did a great job. I'm so glad. And this will be out, this recording. If you want a copy, I can send you a copy too, so you can listen to yourself at your leisure, which I know you probably wouldn't do. But
we'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see.
No, it's really good. It's really good. JS,
thank
I'm
you very much.
What selection you're going to choose, JS?
Well, mine's not nearly as long. It's probably about 2/3 the way in. It's when the Sir and Rebecca are trying to reconcile and grow together and move past. Because, that one night, it's a big deal. There's a lot of ramifications.
Yes. I mean,
if you push your partner to do something they don't want to do, there's always lashing out on any level.
Yeah.
So I chose a small part. I thought the visual was lovely. So I just chose this small piece about 2/3 the way in, and it goes as such. By 4 o'clock, I was naked on my knees, waiting. Sir had given me many opportunities to hone my patience. It was a silent battle. I used to think it was between him and I, and who would act first. I eventually realized it was truly a battle just within myself. The waiting always allowed me to clear my mind. It softened my will, melting every sharp edge to be more pliant and less tense. I knew he would still be a while, but I knew he knew I was already on my knees. Time did not matter. The next thing I knew, though, I was being shaken awake. He was smiling down at me, slowly shaking his head. I had fallen over and was curled in a ball. Damn it, I was distraught. Damn it, sir, I'm so sorry I failed your first task of the day. My dear, to have fallen asleep in such a position shows exactly how tired you are. I cannot get mad about that. Your health is very much my responsibility. Stay there for just a minute more, please. And he quietly stepped around me, putting his things away, and then returned and reached down and helped me to my feet. 2 martinis, my love, please. I beamed and turned to head for the kitchen. I jumped and yelped a bit when he swatted my bruised ass, but it felt wonderful. I was his. I was his to do with as he pleased. That was part one of ownership. I turned to him and said, "Thank you." He smiled at me. "You're welcome, pet." I practically sprinted to the kitchen and made 2 perfect martinis and brought them to him in the living room. He was sitting in his leather lounge chair, looking in total control of himself and the situation. My heart skipped a beat at the sight of how happy and confident he looked. He has always been, but this was just a bit different. I couldn't quite put a finger on it. It didn't matter, since the very core of my being told me this was a good thing, a great thing, and I smiled. He returned to every watt and said nothing. I kept wondering, what was he thinking? I so wanted to know. I wanted to know his every thought and feeling, all of it. However, I also knew it was not my place to ask.
he would share if and when he chose. He gestured for me to sit on the floor beside him before giving him his martini, a short test. So I lowered myself to one knee in front of him and then the other and slowly fell back onto my heels, not spilling a drop of either martini. Well done, pet. And I smiled my thanks and gently held the martinis until he asked for one, which he did a bit later. I handed him a martini and we cheered. I sipped my drink and did nothing else. I was where he wanted me to be. He stared at me, a twinkle in his eye, quietly letting me stew on my own thoughts. He absolutely knew I was doing mental cartwheels, wanting to dissect the events of the last night. He, on the other hand, could let things lie until it was fully organized in his mind. And then, only then, would we talk about it. He was the calm to my storm, organized and thoughtful to my mess and scattered thoughts. Dot, dot, dot.
That was beautifully read too. Wow. Very beautifully read. Thank you guys so much for coming on and taking on the challenge of reading and everything.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes,
appreciate it very much.
Yeah, it's always very fun. It's kind of, I was going to stop the podcast, but talking to new people and getting to all these new insights is kind of addicting. And, I just get it. It's a chance to really expand my experience too, which is very limited. I don't have any kind of BDSM background, but I have in my own books, there are a lot of undertones that I didn't realize until I hit dirty Twitter. And then I'm like, oh, that's what this is. I know dirty Twitter is very enlightening. So your Facebook is where all the romance readers are, but Facebook is so heavily censored. And you come to Twitter where it's still not. I hope they don't. You know, everywhere else, you got your refugees from Tumblr and everything. It's just so censored, and Twitter isn't. And so you come as a romance writer, and there's all this dark romance out. It's not just the 50 Shades, right? There's all kinds of, there's mafia, there's motorcycle. It's really prevalent in romance right now, especially on the Kindle Unlimited platform, because the books are just, you know, you sell them, you write them, you do them yourself, you can get them out really quickly. And so it's a really prevalent thing. So there must be an audience for it. There must be women and men who are curious about it. And but the romance and erotica markets are so separated, you know, but they're so connected, which is one of the things that I'm like, how did this happen? Why are they so separated? Why are they, you know, why is it, this is the, and never the twain shall meet, when there's so many things that are the same.
Yes.
In
it's almost like they're incestuous cousins that nobody wants to talk about.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, that's an elephant. I need to poke at that. I need to be like, you know, these books you're reading, this is so much like BDSM, and that's the dominant, and there's this. No, it's not. Yes. No, really.
No, it is. It is. My lover has always had that theory, and I would try and disagree with him. But when we first met, it was one of the things he had talked about, that every relationship has a top and a bottom. Even if they're not aware of it, there's one that's in control and one that's following. There's always that dynamic in every relationship you have. And I always play with that along with people watching. And he's right. There is. There's always that dynamic.
And we can deny it and pretend like there isn't.
And that's fine.
You know, that we're all, you know, equal totally all the time in every way, shape, or form. But that's not really how reality plays out. And that's definitely not how fantasy plays out.
Yeah.
You know, in fantasy, go ahead.
There's also situations where the sort of typical top-bottom relationship can be reversed. You can see situations like, for example, with Born to Obey and her husband, where in their everyday life, something happens and she has to step up and take control. So it's not something that is permanent. It, it's situation based as well. But I agree with JS that there, in any relationship, DS or vanilla, there tends to be a more dominant personality.
Yeah, it's just a, it exactly. And so it plays out in romance. It plays out in erotica. It plays out in the different journeys, but we don't, it's one of those things that we just either don't recognize or don't want to talk about or don't want to admit, because we all want to be, you know, the dominant. We don't want to claim that at some point in time, be the one in control because of our, you know, our damage or whatever. We want to say we're the one in the control. We want to be in control. Mm-hmm. And it's just, so that's part of my fascination. It's like, so thank you guys so much for coming on and letting me explore that more, reading your work and sharing your journey. How long did it take you guys to get Obliterating out, Vlad, from start, when you first, that first scene to...
I wrote the scene on the dance floor as a standalone scene in mid to late 2015.
2015. Yes. That's great.
I think I had a version of it. My first version of it was completed in April of 16, and JS became involved in late 2016, early 2017, and then it was published in 2019. So it was a journey.
Well, that's wonderful. That makes it more special. I mean, it's not, you know, just your average whip that thing out in a month. It's a journey for both of you and the story as well. So that makes it more special. It's hard to produce a work. It's hard to finish it. It's hard to get it out there. Some people do it regularly, but it's always a really big accomplishment to finish this, a complete story and get it out there.
You're birthing a thought. You're birthing a complete thought, and to then just let it go and see what happens is not easy.
No, it's not. And there's so many writers who are like, well, I'm not this or that, the other thing. And I'm like, no, but look what you birthed. Look what you made and put out into the world. And that has value. Your story there, whatever it is, it has value. And so I'm always telling people that, you know, don't judge it by somebody else's story. Just, you completed this, and that will always be out there. And that's an amazing thing. So I just, again, thank you guys so much. We've been here about an hour. I'm going to let you go. You're welcome. Come back anytime. Come in the chat and contribute to the conversation. My ongoing growth as I discover the connections and relationship and explore more in the BDSM. It just seems to be going that way. I hadn't intended, but it's an influence of Dirty Twitter. I don't know. But, I don't know if you know, but I also write poetry, and I know Vlad follows me. So, and some of my poetry is very little bit exploratory. So, so thank you so much. And
you're most welcome.
Yeah,
that was fun, and thank you.
Yeah, it's always a great time. I had a great time, thank you.
as did I.
Come on, music. Okay. This is Isabellen with Isabella and Drive Scoring Up Story Time. We can't even talk. I'm like a little bit fluttered. I don't know why, but I just a little bit. I want to thank my audience for joining us and my guests who brought the audience. That was kind of amazing. All their friends came to hear them. I want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening to this journey, this writing journey that we're all on. And I don't want to say sexual awakening. I want to say personal awakenings that we have as we tell our stories. Your story has power, it has significance, and it has meaning, whether it's a fantasy or whether it's a reality. And whether I agree with it or can connect with it, somebody out there can. And I think that that's a powerful thing. That's a superpower that we all have. Share your superpower with the world. Thank you so much for tuning in. Have a great day. And we will be telling its stories again very soon.